Mediated Conversation on SAFM.
It's 27 minutes now to 9 the time. Since the start of Russia's Since the start of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, various brands around the world have found themselves having to make decisions that are tied to the invasion. So, for example, the company Apple stopped its Apple payment system in Russia. This meant people in Russia could not use their phones to pay for things such as going on the underground train system in Moscow. In a way, that may have been because of sanctions, but other brands have made public statements about this. Recently, the news service Bloomberg quoted a tweet by an international ice cream brand published at the beginning of February asking the US president not to prepare for war by helping Ukraine. In some ways, brands are now forced to take a stand on issues of society. In the US, for example, many companies came under pressure or were asked to take a stand on the Black Lives Matter movement to show their support for it. Otherwise, they face condemnation. The same thing has happened here. You'll know the damage that brands have suffered when they don't appear to back certain movements in society. Or maybe to put it in entirely another way and to look at it from another direction. Remember when the sports brand Nike said it was supporting our runner Caster Semenya? When they did that through a public statement and an advert, I think most of the country was very, very pleased that they did. So then, what pressures are brands coming under? Is it to their benefit to do this? And what happens, for example, if a brand says it wants peace in Ukraine, but does not mention the way Palestinians are treated by Israel? This is the conversation that you'll hear this morning. First, you'll hear from Dr. Sizikele Maratlule, a creative strategist at Pan-African Brand Advisory Practice. Then from Tsepo Matseba, the managing director of Reputation First, and finally, the founder of Flux Trends, Dion Chang. We start then with Dr. Sizikele Maratlule, creative strategist at Pan-African Brand Advisory Practice. Dr. Maratlule, good morning and thank you for your time.
Good morning, Stephen. Thank you for having us.
Was there a time when brands did not make social statements and now feel they must make social statements? Was there a point at which this dynamic seems to have changed?
I think that brands aren't separate from society, Stephen. So we always have to look at context because it's more than just a brand that's selling soap and a refreshment drink, but it's brands are linked to people and politics. So you can't necessarily function outside of the political component. So in the past, brands may have chosen to hide their heads in the sand like ostrich, but they're now realized, particularly in this creation and culture where consumers are taking a lot more power, that they can't stand on the fence, unlike the South African government is trying to do at the moment.
So for an example, I was sort of looking at examples, and your memory may go back further than mine, but during apartheid in places like the US and the UK, big brands in the US and the UK, Kodak's a good example, came under pressure to disinvest from South Africa. That might have been an important moment in this dynamic.
It's true. I think the withdrawal thing is always going to be a double-edged sword because you'll have people who will say when you withdraw, you actually do disinvestment to the very South Africans that you're trying to support if you're going to use Kodak or even Coca-Cola as an example. But what we do know is that in that period, over 200 Western companies cut ties with South Africa. So the pain was felt by the apartheid government. They lost in excess of $1 billion. In investment, which was an important way of driving through the message that says a systemic change is essential. So even in this instance, I really do think that brands can, when they're deliberating about what to do, to figure out whether their decision will advance humankind. You've just given an example of Apple, which is great, but Google Maps have also done something which is really fantastic. Rather than just shut down the service of Google Maps, they're actually using it to show Ukrainians where the Russian trucks are. So instead of just reporting on local traffic jams, they're now using it to empower the locals. So here's an example of how a brand can slightly just pivot its offering to support a social justice cause.
Why over the last, I suppose, 20 years maybe, 30 years maybe, I'm sort of asking you in a way, what has made this dynamic happen more strongly? Why suddenly are brands having to get into this space? Is it tied to social media?
Social media may have something to do with it, but I also think that we are finally getting to a place where brands have to contend with why they exist. You may have heard in times past, brands speak about purpose. So the idea here is that you have to exist for a purpose much larger than profit. And this then becomes an inflection point because you've got consumers who are using your product who are looking at you and saying, you claim this grand promise or mission or vision to be of use and service to the world. Why would you then support an invasion that truly places humankind at risk? So it's a balancing act between these grand statements that brands are making, but also the accountability that consumers are now demanding from brands.
Did brands do this to themselves?
I think this is a change in time has come, and brands can no longer function outside of society. It is no excuse to say, but my brand is not the ballot paper, so I'm not going to use it to make political statements. Guess what? If you're a brand, you exist in society, you impact culture, and your commercial success is dependent on that intersection of those three things. So it's a reckoning whose time has come, Stephen.
So what is the primary motivation? Let me just explain what I mean. It would be nice to think that the people who run big companies and brands are doing this out of the goodness of their heart. Maybe they are. I'm not convinced of that. But they're probably, it would seem to me, motivated by the biggest markets. And this is where things get really complicated. So, for example, people in the United States, just to take an arbitrary example, people in the United States might well support a company that supports the Olympic Games. But they might also not support China. When the Winter Games go to China, that puts a brand in a very complicated space.
That is true, which I guess the importance here is that brand leadership can no longer be thought of as a marketing undertaking. So if there's a CEO listening who thinks that growing a brand is a function of the marketing director or the CMO, they're really mistaken, because brands are the engines that drive business. So when you're making a decision as ginormous as, are we going to be investing in the Olympics, by way of example, Stephen, then you have to be okay with the fallout that may come from that association. Because the question here isn't what is the most expedient way to maximize profit. You're now being challenged to ask, what are the brand choices I can make to advance humankind? It's a much bigger ask, and it's a much bigger brief than just, let's take out an ad, let's put happy-looking faces on television, and the world is going to forget that they actually are still participating in a territory is as difficult as Ukraine is today.
There's another example, which is in one domestic market. Let me explain what I mean, and I intend to bring this example through the conversation. So in the United States, so here, for a brand to tweet or to say that people should get a COVID-19 vaccination is not really that controversial. It's a little bit controversial, but it's not that controversial. In the US, if a brand were to say, get a vaccination, that could be very controversial. Now, it might be the right thing, I believe it is, to say, get a vaccination. But you could well, say, for example, you're a brand in certain geographic areas in the United States, you could suffer as a result of doing that. What I'm trying to get to is, how does a brand navigate a divided society?
So you used an example of Ben & Jerry earlier, right? And the reason why Ben & Jerry, the ice cream brand, is actually in the perfect position to make a judgment on social justice and beckoning or inviting the U.S. not to participate in this war is because they social justice is baked into that business. I think part of the problem that many brands will find now, Stephen, is lack of credibility. If you are found to be getting onto this bandwagon, much like other brands did with Time's Up and Black Lives Matter, they were found to be lacking in credibility because all they were doing was espousing a message on one side and still underpaying their black colleagues on the other side. So now what's happening in the world of brands is people are demanding that every node of your business must inculcate equality and social justice into it. So you can't make pronouncements for the purpose of PR employ children under 12, by way of example, or discriminate against mothers who have more than three children, which is also just a random example. So it is the time in which we live, the power of the consumer voice, the requirements and the accountability that consumers are demanding of brands, and brands reckoning that they don't function outside of culture.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I think I might have interrupted you, but Doctor, I really appreciate the time. Thank you. Dr. Sizakile Marutlule is the creative strategist at Pan-African Brand Advisory Practice. I really do appreciate the time this morning. Well, let's continue now. Tsepo Matseba is the Managing Director of Reputation First. Tsepo, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
If there is such a great risk, is there really a value in a brand making a social statement? Ben & Jerry's probably feels a little silly about what they said about the Ukrainian war.
Yeah, so brands don't operate in isolation from society, but they also don't operate in isolation from the economic ecosystem within which they operate. So taking a moral high ground has to be clearly aligned with a brand's values. So whenever a brand takes decisions, it has to say, but is this in line with my deeper inner core purpose? And if that core purpose is being challenged by operating in a specific country or a specific environment, in an environment that may seem to suggest that they support a, for example, war, as we see, or an invasion, a brand may choose to leave, because that in itself affects their reputation capital in the long run, and something that is very, very difficult and hard to recover from. When you think about it, actually, at a deeper brand level, fundamentally, brands are about authenticity, and it is when that authenticity, as a mismatch between the values and authenticity and the decisions or the behavior, the culture of a brand on a day-to-day basis, that they lose long-term value or long-term capital. Because remember, a brand, as we often say, it is a promise fulfilled. And now when you operate in an environment that is seems to be toxic, an environment that takes a very, very deliberate stance against another nation, which is directly opposite to your values or your value system, you are now placing the brand or the organization and a group of organizations that you serve at a serious risk in the long run. And think about it broadly in a global context, that you have a problem in one area that may have a ripple effect in other parts of the world within which you operate, especially when you look at brands such as BP, who have already now taken a position to walk away from that part of the world in Russia, and wiping out about 20% of their stake in the Russian oil producer Rosneft. And that, in real terms, the value is around $14 billion US dollars. And that tells you that brands are pretty much part of the economic ecosystem in as much as they are part of a societal system.
This may sound a little rough, a little harsh, but it might be easy to make a decision if you're a company, an American brand, to pull out of Russia because Russia's economy is so much smaller than the United States's. But it's much harder to pull out of an economy like China, where it's, you know, you might find that the market for certain products is bigger than in the United States, which means you actually have to make an almost impossible decision.
Yeah, so it's a tricky decision, and brands, I think, take such decisions on an as and when basis, depending on the context. I mean, when you compare China and Russia, and the extent to which China is able to actually respond swiftly whenever if there were sanctions against China, China would probably by now saying, we have already capacitated to create a similar business. We have already capacitated, or we are capacitating to create a similar business. Now, the Russian leaders or politicians are actually already saying, the people close to Putin, they're already saying that this provides Russia with an opportunity to create its own capacity and build its own economies that would replace some of the brands that are exiting. But that would, by extension, take a long time. And in fact, they have a far more complex situation, reputationally speaking, because they are compromising their own citizens at this point in time, who are employed by companies such as McDonald's, who are employed by companies such as Starbucks. At the face value, it may seem insignificant to say somebody works for Starbucks, but actually, when you look at Coca-Cola, H&M, and all those retail brands operating in Russia, or that were operating in Russia, in fact, they create a whole lot of trust, and because that's because they serve communities, but they also employ people in Russia. And now, as the Russian political leadership, you now have a risk, a as a country brand, that you have actually marginalized your internal stakeholders, which are your own citizens, the employees of these companies, but also now you are damaging potential future relationships with other parts of the world, with other country brands in as far as Africa and key areas in Europe, especially given the extreme levels of sanctions that were posed by the US and Europe on Russia. So it is actually a devastating position for any country brand to be in, but it's more devastating for the individuals. The people who will suffer the most are the ones that we promise every day in our communication messages as brands, and those are the citizens of Russia.
How important is timing? I'm aware that during the Black Lives Matter protests in the United States, some brands didn't necessarily act very quickly and found themselves coming under pressure as a result. You and previous guests have made important examples around authenticity. You can't sort of go from one side to another side, if you like. If you go too early, you may lose sales. If you act too late, you may lose sales. How important is timing when a company makes a statement? I mean, in a way, going to war is relatively easy. Other changes in society around social justice, timing is much harder.
Yeah, so timing is difficult, and that's because you have to balance your internal reality, if particularly you're operating in Russia, against other countries that may not necessarily stand on your side, where you still have operations. And the reality is that these are two interdependent. The world is too interconnected and too interdependent to ignore. And so sometimes you're better off taking a position, even though you may not necessarily say we're leaving the country, but you can make your intention clear from the outset, and you can also be deliberate about the fact that your company values stand for the following, and then give yourself some time to collate your view, to engage with stakeholders. And the key issue is that you are proactively communicating. Where brands fail is when they actually, somebody said earlier, when they take this hiding in under the sand and then hoping that things will get better or things will improve in their favor, only to find that a significant portion of market cap has been wiped off the market because they are not acting or they are not articulating their view. So part of reputation management is stakeholder engagement, and that stakeholder engagement is both at home within the country where you're operating, but also outside, cross-country, different stakeholders, communities, so that you are proactively being seen to be doing something without necessarily taking a position for or against. And that can be done by just simply articulating what your values as a company, what you stand for.
Tsepo Motsepe, thank you, Managing Director of Reputation First. In a moment, the founder of Flux Trends, Dion Chang. You're with SFM, 9 minutes to 9.
Mediated conversation on SAFM.
8 minutes to 9 the time. Continuing your mediated conversation this morning around brands and social issues. Dion Chang is the founder of Flux Trends. Dion, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
Has there been a move where over the last 10, 20 years, consumers are demanding more from a brand than they did before? It's not just about the running shoe. It's that the person who makes my running shoe has to be seen to be doing the right thing.
Yes, absolutely. It's been building up. And, you know, we've been tracking even a phenomenon called, the activist CEO. Some of the other people that were talking about sort of the reputational brand and all that. What I think people, we've been sort of discussing the relationship between a brand and a customer, but I think the one thing that's developed within the last 5 years or so, and especially the last 2 or 3 years, is the employees asking that they work for a company that they also believe in their values. So it's a two-pincer approach. You're trying to help, have that stand and announce your values to your customers. But more and more, it is becoming an internal problem where the workers, I think about just before the pandemic hit, Google, the employees, did a staged a walkout, did protests, all of those kind of things. So in terms of those companies, you really, really have to look not only externally, but internally as well.
What happens if you just say nothing? I mean, is that a possibility? And I say this in a world in which some companies, some brands have found themselves at the wrong end of an incident. And often what they've done publicly has done a sort of one response to it and then just continued advertising as normal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so the phenomenon of different types of, you know, washing, so pink washing, black washing, green washing, meaning that a brand would say one thing and then not really do it. And, you know, we've been speaking about authenticity beforehand. And I think that's really, really important because you can't just not sit on the fence and not have that value as well or what your positioning is. I think people really demand that now, and it's become part of it. Zikrela said right at the beginning, you are intricately interwoven into the fabric of society. So what your brand does is not separate anymore. And I think what's been building, you know, you mentioned the past, say, decade, is really this shift from stakeholder primacy, shareholder primacy, into stakeholder primacy as well, to try and look at who the stakeholders are within that brand or with that business, and it's not just about the shareholders and the bottom line and making profits. So, and I think what you need to put into this conversation as well is if you start looking at your Generation Z, who are now not only your new customer, the oldest ones are, you know, they've come of age, they're 24, 25, they're also your employees. So that whole message about it being an internal as well as external sort of value positioning has become completely crucial, and you can't escape that, I don't believe.
So let me give you an example. I mean, all these examples are sort of controversial, and I'll have to give examples of brands to do it. But let's just say Coke and Pepsi say they support human rights, right? But they also make sugary drinks that lead to obesity. I mean, I know they do diet. I know. The point I'm trying to get to is there not a big risk of people running into trouble? So another example might well be a camera company. You could easily argue that many young people feel more anxiety than the generations before them simply because of the focus on cell phones and selfies and cameras, and that maybe cell phones just shouldn't have, you know, put the focus on cameras in the way that they do. I mean, these may seem like silly examples. The point I'm trying to get to is there not a trap waiting for brands that, when they say something about anything to do with morality, don't invade Ukraine, Israel's behaving incorrectly and immorally in the Middle East as examples, that they're going to be their own conduct is going to come under the most excruciating microscope?
I absolutely agree with you. And I think that's become even more prevalent now in a sort of a social media era. You saw it, you know, in 2020 with the murder of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter. A whole lot of brands came out, you know, on Instagram, and they would have a plain black photograph, nothing there, you know, saying support. And of course, I think specifically your younger demographic, you know, do some digging, and they say, well, you say this, and the boards of directors paint a completely different picture. So it is really a very, very tricky line for companies to do that. And I think gone are the days that you can, push the one thing, you know, where the sugary drinks, but then sort of say, have this other completely, totally opposite thing. I think what's important for brands in this era, and, you know, they're calling it we're living an era of a four-hour news cycle, is that you have to actually prepare for this, for the inevitability of that. You spoke earlier about, with Seth, about timing. And I think that's really, really important, is that you can't wait for an incident to happen. You've actually got it now. I think every single brand has to get it ready, understand, you know, where do we stand on this? What are those things? Because it will probably hit you in one way or another, you know, in the next couple of years anyway.
How difficult is it to make the correct decision? Where I'm going with this is, who needs to be in the room? And I imagine the answer probably lies in diversity. Everyone, including your board, right at the top, needs to be properly diverse if you're going to make the right decisions.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why, you know, the example of the Black Lives Matter, was people just digging through and then looking at the company's structure, the ecosystem, all of those kind of things. So you've really got to be careful, because that transparency, if you're not transparent about it, people are going to dig. People have got a lot of time, and you will be named and shamed. And we've seen how devastating those things. I mean, sometimes some brands can ride the storm. Like you say, you can just kind of just keep your head low. And, you know, unfortunately, ironically, the brands that do stick their heads above the parapets, then, you know, they do get shot at. But I think the bottom line is that you cannot sit on the fence anymore. You can't just sort of say, okay, it'll blow over and it'll be all right, because, yeah, the internet never forgets either.
This is obviously going to get more and more tricky. Do companies need to spend a lot more time understanding what's going on and what the consequences of everything that is going to happen? I mean, I'm sure they will find that over time this gets more and more complicated. Although from times, there's a moment to align yourself. I think the Ukraine war is an example for a brand to align itself.
Yes, I mean, and you know, I go back again to, you know, to this digital generation, Generation Z. They are your new customers. They are coming into your workforce. These are, you know, these are the generation with probably the highest social justice barometers there, and they really have nothing to lose. So that's why they will speak out on inclusion. They will speak out on sustainability. All of those kind of things. And these are, and they are starting to change. We've seen it. It might be slow. But the more they come of age, this generation are the change makers. They are making brands think twice about, you know, their sustainability claims, their diversity claims, all of those kind of things. And they consume very, very differently. So, you know, if any brand wants to really invest in their future, you know, they'd best look at this now. And if you have been standing on the sidelines, then it's time to get a little bit dirty and wade in.
Dion Chang, thank you, founder at Flux Trends. Really appreciate the time. My thanks also to Tsepo Matseba, the Managing Director of Reputation First. And starting us off, Dr. Sizikele Marotule, the Creative Strategist at Pan-African Brand Advisory Practice. We, of course, will be back tomorrow from Stanza, Joey, Zelma, myself, Mdu. See you tomorrow. You with SAFM leading the conversation. Good morning, 9 o'clock.